The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
TV party tonight!
What?
TV party tonight!
Oh! We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated, yes,
to our favorite shows!
Oh, my circuit!
Everybody loves Hypnoto!
Scary Dog!
Larson at Blurnville!
Futurama!
Good evening. You are listening to a Rattledge Broadcasting premiere podcast. Vroom vroom. Up here. Vroom vroom. Now up here. Vroom vroom. So, over here.
Where's the bike going to be next? I don't know.
Not like this. Now I'm in the side compartment. Now I'm on a trike.
Right. Now I'm riding bitch.
This is TV Party Tonight, and our favorite show tonight is Sons of Anarchy Season 2. Sons of Anarchy is the story of the Teller Morrow family of Chaming, California, as well as other members of the Sons of Anarchy Motorcycle Club, Redwood Originals, Sam Crow is what they call it, their families, various Chaming townspeople, allied and rival gangs, associates, and law agencies that undermine and support Sam Crow's legal and illegal enterprises. Is brought to you by the good people at FX and was created by the man, Kurt Sutter. And joining me tonight, ladies and gentlemen, he'll rip your mind out. He'll burn your soul. He'll turn you into me. And nobody wants that. He'll turn you into me because he's a liar, ladies and gentlemen. Jesse Starcher, how do you do, sir?
Well, that ties into this whole season, doesn't it, somehow?
It does. It does. Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised that the man, the singer of the TV Party by Black Flag, the singer of the Rollins Band, for which it is named after him, Henry Rollins, is in season two of Sons of Anarchy. Funniest, he did, a couple of years back, I saw him do a spoken word concert and spoken word show, and he was talking about how he had to, I can't remember what project he was working on, but they had to film him like naked getting out of like the tub and walking, and they needed him specifically because he is covered in tattoos like you do. And Henry Rollins is a shy boy, Jesse. You know, my boy is like, as many times as Jesse has been asked to walk naked out of his bathroom, Jesse is a shy boy.
I am.
Just like Henry Rollins. And so Henry Rollins was not really wanting to walk naked out of this bathroom for this shot. And the director's like, look, man, I don't have time to like raid the prisons for another guy covered in tattoos. Like, you have to do this. You're it. And Henry Rollins is nothing if not a cowboy. So he did, in fact, cowboy up. And they got the scene. The other really funny story from his spoken word was they sent him over to do one of those USO shows. And they just sent Henry Rollins over. They didn't send the Rollins band. They sure as shit didn't send Black Flag. And so he gets there. So he gets to Afghanistan or Iraq, wherever, or Kuwait, wherever they sent him in the Middle East. And like he's meeting the troops. He does the meet and greet. He does the tour. He does all the things you do as a artist when you do the USO tour. For the troops. And he's like, okay, this has been great. They're like, okay, well, you're on now. And he's like, the fuck do you mean I'm on? They're like, you're on. Like, you have to go perform for the troops. That's the whole reason you're here. He was like, what do you want me to do, juggle? Like,
what are you going to do?
Like, the Rollins band is not here. Just the Rollins is here.
Yeah.
And they were like, you better figure out something, man. I don't know, juggle chainsaws or some shit.
Wow.
So he goes out there, and he's Henry Rollins, very, like, fairly progressive, liberal Henry Rollins, and he's in front of all of these, you know, warrior American troops, and he's like, I don't know what, he's, like, thinking to himself, like, I don't know what to say, I don't know what to do, and he's like, hey, doesn't George Bush suck or something? He said something like really crowd pleasing. Oh, and he got like an uproarious like fucking cheering. And he's like, oh, okay, I got this. And then he proceeded to do just spoken word. So yes, I'm a huge fan of Henry Rollins, and I was really excited to see him this season.
So as far as his acting career goes, I don't know if I feel like I've seen him in something else, but Johnny I cannot Mnemonic. Remember what
Johnny Mnemonic. What,
okay. All right. So he does great in this season, by the way. Really I don't have any complaints whatsoever. He pulls off his character, AJ Weston, really well. You know, he's supposed to be a white supremacist. He's intimidating as fuck just to look at him. I mean, he is an intimidating guy.
Like, again, Black Flag and the Rollins Band were not exactly like a far right outfit. You know, they were as true blue left, you know, progressive left, rock and roll, punk rock, as punk rock can be. You know, and Henry Rollins is a cool dude. You know, he's, I remember again, his talking about like his spoken word and how like he kind of follows like a Wario ethos and, you know, like just tries to push himself to be the best that he can. You know, he's the last guy you would think of that would play a neo-Nazi, but that's
right.
Neo-Nazi. My favorite. I don't want to jump too far ahead because we're kind of all over the map tonight talking about Sons of Anarchy season 2. But my favorite thing about him is that they obviously had to add some tattoos. Did you happen to notice that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He
have fuck them ends really right. on his chest. That was right. add on. And I noticed it at the very end of the season. Spoilers. I noticed it at the end of the season where they execute him in the bathroom. It was a great scene, by the way. Oh, like, yeah. he knows Jax has him dead to rights. They, you know, we're going to talk about this at length in a little bit. But, you know, after everything that's happened this season, after everything that the neo-Nazis and the white separatists did to Gemma, did to Sam Crow, just did to Charming in general, this is it. They won the war. You know, Sam Crow beat the white nationalists, and he knows that he has them dead to rights, and he's got them there with his kid. And Henry Rollins like sends the kid out of the room and he just looked at Jack and he's like, my kid never sees this. Not begging for his life, not, you know, trying to fight his way out of it. He was like, he lost the war, you know, and he just kind of goes down like a man. And all he says is, my kid never sees this. And Jack, to his credit, of course, we're going to talk about what happened to Jack at the end of the season in a minute. Jack, to his credit, is like, okay, you know. It's weird because I complained in the first season review that I don't love this show if for no other reason than I always feel like I'm rooting for the bad guys. But Kurt Sutter and company, and you could speak on this, I think do a really good job of saying, look, we know these guys are ne'er-do-wells, but they live by a code. It's kind of the, you know, the Omar thing. You know, right. They live by a code. They try to operate as honorably as outlaws can. And Jax is like the very definition of a guy trying to figure out how to keep his soul as clean as possible in this very dirty environment.
Right, right. And what the motorcycle club is involved in. And I think that's a lot of the crux of this whole series is the fact that we are kind of thrown into this as Jax is trying to, or coming to grips with the fact that, you know, the motorcycle club that his dad helped found is involved in gun running. And so, I mean, if that wasn't an element of this this motorcycle club, then, this would be a motorcycle club that he'd love to belong to. But instead, they're thrust, because they're running guns, into violence. They're thrust into all these situations that clearly Jax doesn't want to be involved in, but has to be because his brothers are part of this club as well. That's what makes it a club, you know, and he has to step up, and it has to be a violent thing, even though he doesn't want it to be. There's definitely a code of honor that this is a brotherhood. You know, these are guys that are backing each other up as best as they can, even though
when they're not shooting each other's wives.
And the villain of this piece, a lot of times you'll see, is Clay, who is the president of this motorcycle club.
He's so matter of fact about it. He was like, we are a sand crow and we run guns, as if like that is the entire sole existence of a motorcycle club, is to just be gun runners. And it's like, I beg to differ, sir. Sometimes a motorcycle club just likes to ride their bikes. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think a lot of it has to do with money and just their ways of going about it and the type of lifestyle that they've lived for so long. Now it's like they have to run guns in order to make money for some reason. But yeah, man, I see this as a sort of like this family trying to get through all of this hatred throughout this season for sure. There's a lot of violence, a lot of hatred between some members, and how are they going to resolve it? Is it going to get resolved?
Well, let's piggyback on the end of last season. So I made a kind of a snarky joke about it, but a big plot through thread is that they are under the watchful eye of the FBI. You have the FBI agent who's been out to get them since season one, and she attempted to turn Opie. Oh, it didn't work, but she painted him as a turncoat, and they in turn tried to kill him because they thought he in fact did turn on the club and was a spy for her, or you know, a plant or whatever. But because him and his wife kind of traded cards for the night, she ended up getting killed. And then it was like a big, deep, dark secret between like Clay and Jax, and they never told Opie. Well, this, and that was a big reason coming out of season one, that Jax wanted things to change, and that, you know, him and Clay going into season two, you would think like the major story was how at odds Clay and Jax were. And that is definitely a part of it. But the primary element, and this is why I'm coming to enjoy the show as just a soapy, violent drama. Which is what it is, but you know, like I said last review, I like the police procedurals. I like to root for the cops to bag the bad guys. Even in The Wire, I was rooting for McNulty. But I'm coming around on Sons of Anarchy, having let go of that need to cheer for the good guys, because this season's a really good example of this. This was a lot more focused. I thought season one was a lot more meandering. And it was a lot of world building.
Yes.
And when you're not interested in the world to start with, it makes for kind of a slow, boring watch. Now, here they introduce the white nationalists and the neo-Nazi group led by Henry Rollins, and it's a more tightly focused story, and it's classic good guys versus the bad guys, as opposed to how muddled it was last season. White nationalists are coming in to push Sam Crow out and take over Charming, and they're dealing in heroin, they're dealing in guns. They are trying to stomp out Sam Crow. And whether, you know, and again, letting go of my sort of preconceived notions of good, right, wrong, good and bad, they're the stars of the show. They're the good guys by default. You know, they are the anti-heroes. They're the stone cold Steve Austin, if you will, of this show. And then in walks, you know, Vince McMahon and the corporate ministry to keep going with this tortured metaphor. And they are here to put an end. So like you're cheering for Sam Crow to take on. It's so funny. It's almost like, granted, this was years ago, so this is obviously doesn't work, but it's almost like they heard me complain and were like, oh, so you need a bigger bad guy, do you? You need And they went for like the lowest hanging fruit. It was just like, hey, asshole, you need something to cheer against? You need something to root against? How about Nazis? You gonna go for that?
You wanna root
against the Nazis, you Jew? Like, all right, stop yelling at me, Kurt Sutter. So anyway, I don't know why I took this so personally. But so that's what happens. It's like that's the whole season, is you have Sam Crow versus the white nationalists and the neo-Nazis. You have the mending offenses, you have the at odds, and then the mending offenses between Jax and Clay. And then I think, you know, kind of a deep third is the, I can't remember the character's name, Tara, I think it is. Jax is his girlfriend. Like
old lady.
But the grooming, Jesse, the grooming that she goes through this season, like she really bonds with Gemma, especially after the gang rape scene. and all of that. But like by the end of it, like again, we're jumping around a little bit, but that beating she throws on the one administrator at the hospital, like yeah. that was quite the moment.
Oh yeah. She she definitely grew some stones, I guess is probably the best way to put it. Cause she,
I can't even keep her on the Adrian scale anymore. She's no longer the bitchy, naggy, you know, wife. She's coming into she's fucking Gemma in training.
Yeah. Well, she, there's that also that one moment where she kind of stands up to that porn actress, and then proceeds to screw Jax in the bathroom while looking her straight in the eye while doing it. And it's like, oh, damn, girl.
That was a quality moment. That was a damn. Fuck you, bitch, if I've ever seen one.
Yeah. 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 This is, you know, Sam Crow, they are one thing you could say about them as heroes, I guess you would say, or anti-heroes. One of the things I've always found admirable, at least of that motorcycle club, even with Clay at the head of the table, mm-hmm. is the fact that they want to keep charming. Like they don't want big commerce coming in. And that's what Zobel and the White Nationalists and all them kind of start to sure. do. They're going to come in, they're going to start developing things. Yeah. And Sam Crow doesn't want that to happen. Not only that, but because the bigger charming gets, the more drugs that start to come into the town. And they don't want that either. That's something that they have a kind of like a hard line against. Mitch Pileggi's character, I wish I could remember his name, but I think he's in the first season. I can't remember if he's in much of the second season or not. I think he might be. But anyway, you know, he was dealing in meth and they were at mm-hmm. odds with him a lot of the times because he kept bringing his shit in when he shouldn't have been. So, Sam Crow's got it's definitely got, you know, some things to cheer for, but definitely this season you can cheer for them because you want to see them shoot the shit out of some Nazis. You want to see that happen.
Yeah. And like I said, it's definitely the lowest of low hanging fruit because where else are you going to go after fucking Nazis in terms of like, well, what's the baddest, you know,
like, right.
you know, who else are they going to put as the villains? I'd be curious to see what they're going to do with season three. Given how this season ends, but I throw the term lowest hanging fruit and there's a negative connotation to it, but sometimes that's okay. You know, there's a reason why, and I go back to the pro wrestling reference, there's a reason why a lot of the 80s was, well, we'll have an Iranian bad guy, we'll have a Russian bad guy, and we'll have this kind of bad guy, and that kind of bad guy. Because they were easily identifiable things for American Shrewd against. For, you know, just really quick, Yokozuna, because when we were into our Japan-hating phase in like the 90s, the late 80s and the early 90s, the whole reason why, you know, a giant Samoan was given a Japanese sumo gimmick was because that was a thing the average American could identifiably rally against.
Right.
You know, and then they threw poor Lex Luger into the red, white, and blue, and everything went downhill after that. But we're not here to talk about wrestling.
Lex Express.
Ugh. Poor Lex Luger. Anyway, I do want to talk about, we're going to split the show in half like we always do. We're going to kind of hit the finer points of season two for the first half of this review. And then Jesse's going to pull it out and show it to us. Right, Jesse?
All the time.
Yes, Jesse. That's for those of you watching. That's what Jesse does on this show. He whips it out and shows it to everybody. So stay tuned. Let's get serious, though, for a moment. So we talked about how much we loved Henry Rollins in this season. And he is just a straight, like, nope, no blacks, no Mexicans, don't deal with them. We are here for white people. We are here for the business of white people and for the protection of white people. And that's all there is to it. He is a true believer. Kind of honorable in that sense. Like, you definitely, like, if you have to sympathize with one villain, he's the one you sympathize with because the other guy's just a bag of shit. Mm-hmm. Like the main boss, the Vince McMahon character.
Zobel,
yeah. You know, this is the guy who's just like, yes, I am preaching white separatism and I am preaching white nationalism and all of this. And I am in line with the neo-Nazis, but I'm also going to do business with the Mexicans because I'm evil, you know, and I'm also going to do this. I'm going to do that. And it's funny because the whole season, the whole season kind of jumpstarts with them attacking Gemma and kidnapping her and gang raping her. And the message delivered was stop selling guns to blacks and Mexicans.
Right.
And a few episodes later, it's not so much they don't want to do that, it's they don't want Sam Crow doing it. They are trying to eliminate the competition, see? But I want to go back to that because, you know, Gemma in the first season, and all credit in the world to Katie Sagal, I think she gets short shrift because she, for the longest time, was known as Peggy on Married with Children. You know, and then, you know, she's had a solid television career, but I don't know if she gets the credit that she deserves as, you know, as a really great dramatic actress. And then, you know, and then like I said, the first season, she's like hitting broads with a skateboard, you know, and she's just whining and carrying on. And it's great, but, you know, it's not stretching as an actress. And then they do the bit where she gets kidnapped by Henry Rollins and company, and they chain her to the fence, and they all take turns raping her, and it's just the most awful thing. And for the rest of the season, she's playing a traumatized woman who is trying to maintain her strength and her courage in the face of trauma, in the face of shame, the shame that she feels. And I don't want to get too much on a tangent on this, but it's the survivor mentality of those who have been through a sexual assault. You have done absolutely nothing wrong, but still carry like an enormous amount of shame. Right. And she portrays that perfectly in this season. And as brutal as that is, I'll tell you what, like I was kind of like in and out of the season until then, like that scene had me like horrified and gripped. And then it was like, well, what are we going to do now? So it's like, it roped me in for the remainder of the season, all 13 episodes, because of the strength of that one scene. Fucking Henry Rollins. Henry Rollins in that scene is such a bastard. I mean, like, you know, he's got like the Shape mask on. He's got like the Michael Myers mask on. And he's like all up in her face after they've just had their way with her and she's chained to the fence. And he's like, give them the message or we do this again. And like, you fucking believe it. Like, there's a lot of fucking threat there from Henry Rollins. I wanted to fast forward to towards the end of the season where, you know, her and Tara have been discussing it and she's been trying to work with it. And this is one scene where she's talking about how Clay won't love her anymore. He won't want to touch her because another man violated her.
Right.
Ugh. Just you could spend an hour just discussing that alone, that mentality.
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, again, it ties into the Jax versus Clay storyline because she sees them at odds with each other and it's tearing the whole club apart and things are going badly because these two can't get on the same page and they have to have a united, you know, they have to have a united front against the white nationalists or they're going to lose everything. And so she finally says the only way to bring these two together is to tell them what happened to me, which she does not want to do. And it is
The whole season, you're waiting for her to say something because you, number one, you want to see the club go after those guys. And you can't understand why she's not saying anything. But I think a lot of it is because she doesn't want.
It's not an easy thing to admit you've been sexually violated.
Right. Right. That's
ask any survivor. This is not an easy thing to talk about. Yeah. And then you have to be this badass fucking tiger mom of a, you know, of a gun running outlaw motorcycle club.
Right.
The belief that you are destroyed as a person by something like this is huge. And she doesn't want to be seen as less than by these people that she respects and needs the respect of. But she kind of sacrifices that to bring them together. And, you know, credit to the writing, credit to the acting in that scene. It's, you know, it definitely made me tear up a bit, you know, to see Jax and Clay react to her, to see how tender Jax was with her after that.
It was just like that night before it was revealed, Jax had said, I'm going nomad. He took his patch off. He set it down, went in and sat down at the table. And then I think the way, if I remember right, and it's been a while since I watched it, but I feel like the way that they ended the episode is her telling them and then both of them just realizing, okay, our differences don't mean anything right now.
Yeah.
Clay and Jax are like there for Gemma. And that really made made that episode. And I think they ended it like that too on that episode. But
I just credit all the credit in the world to Katie Sagal. She was magnificent in that scene.
I agree.
I don't know if she was ever given any kind of like Emmy nominations for this show, but she fucking deserves it.
She did fantastic. It's some of the best acting I've. I mean, I didn't watch a whole lot of Married with Children. She was also in a show with John Ritter, wasn't she? With the 10 ways to date a teenage daughter or something. I can't remember.
10 rules for dating my daughter or some dumb shit.
Something like that. Yeah. she shines. Yeah. She's on Roseanne or not Roseanne. By golly, not Roseanne. She's on the Connors right now. I don't know if you've watched the Connors.
Oh yeah. Lately. She's Dan's girlfriend or wife now. Is
fucking great when you think about it. She does a great job there, but yeah, she's really shining here as far as acting ability goes in season two.
The only other thing I wanted to talk about was the conclusion of season two. So another through thread through this season is that, again, to maintain their ability to sell guns, they need a pipeline to get guns. And so they are dealing with the Irish, the IRA. And there's one of the guys that's part of the IRA is also a rat for the FBI. Can we just talk about that scene for a moment at the very end where they kind of have, and I don't want to play the clip, but they have a, it was me, James. It was me the whole time, the author of all your pain. There's this bit where he's trying to get a hold of the kid in the IRA is trying to get a hold of his dad. And like he goes to the wharf and he throws the phone in the water and everything. And she was like, we knew about the cell phone. We knew about your dad. We knew about everything. And I'm just like, what is this fucking, again, the WWE? It was me, Austin. It was me the whole time. Like, ugh.
I did it. I did it for The Rock.
I did it for The Rock, but how many wrestling references can we get into this one review? Let's count. A lot of people watching tonight, and they're just going, I don't watch wrestling. I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Anyway, the point is, we're going to lose the entire audience, is that it seemed a little, I'll make a different reference. I'll make a Simpsons reference. It seemed a little, the FBI knew the CIA was setting up the DEA the entire time. And I'm like, ugh, they give this woman way too much in this show. But what I love though, is what an ass she is. What, like, she's another like unsympathetic cop villain in this show. So the whole thing is the dad's like, you got to kill the FBI agent. And so they go back to the house and he draws a gun on her. And of course he pusses out. And so, but then the girlfriend shows up and
Polly, which is Zobel's daughter.
Right. Yeah. So the girlfriend shows up, Zobel's daughter, and she gets shot. And then Gemma shows. Yeah. Gemma shoots her is what happened.
Gemma's the one that shoots her. Yeah.
Yeah. Gemma's the one that shoots her. She's trying to get revenge for what happened to her. So she shoots the girlfriend. And then the FBI agent shows up. She's like, what now? And this is after the FBI agent has already shot the kid.
Yep.
That was it. Now I remember the sequence of events. He draws the gun on her. She's like, no, you won't, pussy. And he doesn't. And so she disarms him. And then he tries to make a run for it. And she shoots him in the fucking back, which you're not supposed to do. And so she's like,
I think let him go. I think she said, like, go ahead and go or something. Anyway, he takes off running. Yeah. And she shoots him in the back, which is, she's. Let me tell you, this Agent Stahl, she's crazy, man. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, you're fine. I don't know if you in the many years we've been podcasting, but I think I may have interrupted you once or twice. So you're fine, Jesse. You just talk all over me. It's fine. So anyway, so she shoots him in the back, and you're not supposed to shoot an unarmed man in the back. I don't know if anyone knows that. Like, I'm not a law enforcement expert, but last I checked, shooting a guy as he's running away from you is not a thing you're supposed to do. Is law
not kosher? Not kosher.
Yeah. So he's dead, and then the girlfriend walks in, my baby. And then Gemma walks in, shoots her, and the FBI is just like, oh well, this worked out perfectly. So she frames Gemma for the murderer of these two people, and then she's like, all right, I'm gonna give you a head start, run. And it's like, oh, you horrible human being.
Yeah. At first you're thinking that Agent Stahl's not going to do anything, just call this in legit how it went down, but then she like throws the gun at Gemma catches the gun.
Gemma's fingerprints are on it. You sneaky bitch.
She knew. She's like, damn it. And then, she's on the run at the end of this season. But now we,
where
we,
are I know you? I'm on the lam. So good.
You are you're getting to the where this kid's dad gets involved and how we end this season. So I think that's where you were working.
Yeah, that's where I was headed. So you know, I don't like here's a brave statement. I don't like child abuse. And I know I'm about to say something. I'm about to say something controversial.
Yeah. It might controversial.
I don't like it when children are harmed. Take it easy, everyone.
Canceled.
Yeah. So anyway, so Jax has this baby with his former meth head girlfriend, and they've been caring for this baby. They rehab this baby. This baby is just doing just fine, and the baby is with Tara. And so, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. The dad lost his son, right? Son got shot by the FBI agent and framed Gemma for it. So he was just like, you motherfuckers. But he says it with an Irish, you know, I, your motherfuckers. You know, I don't know. And then
he
like,
said it while dancing a jig, too.
Yeah, when Lucky Charms came out of his mouth.
Like, I'm going to steal a pot of gold in the background.
He puts the pot of gold down, he picks up the baby, and he fucking takes off. Yeah. And Jax, who, you know, Charlie Hunnam is just cooler than the other side of the pillow. We all know this. You know, Charlie Hunnam, he's a handsome man. He's a good looking man. He's cooler. He's cool. He's awesome. You know, he is the reason people watch this show because it ain't for fucking Tombstone Head, you know, Ron Perlman.
I think as it's said, Tom Arnold, I believe, says in this season that he's much like Brad Pitt, except less gay. I think is the
quote. That's a quality line. I actually didn't pick up on that. That's awesome. So yeah, so hot as shit, Charlie Hunnam, right? He's always, you know, as fucked up as the show can be with him, and you know, at different times, sort of putting pressure on him, he always handles it with big dick energy. Generally, you know what I'm talking about.
BDE.
Toxic masculinity. That was a different podcast. Yeah, he's always got the swag. He's always got the confidence. He can handle any situation, and you know, he just walks cool, everything cool. And then they steal his baby. They stole his baby, Jesse Starcher. And have you ever seen a man just crack? And I don't mean like, oh, like mentally he was having. No, I mean like just like lightning bolt cracks down your body and you crumble to the ground. You know, like a piece of, you know, like a broken window. Because that's what happens to Charlie. All the credit in the world to Charlie Hunnam for the physical acting at the end of this season. Because I'll tell you, the end of last season, I was like, and, you know, he's like, and Clay, I will make you pay for all the things. Gun running is wrong, and I'm going to change the way that we ride motorcycles. Whatever. I'm doing this because I love Jesse and Ronnie, who, right, Ronnie's late to the show tonight. I'm doing this because I love you guys. I don't fucking care about this. And then what a switch, because there's Charlie Hunnam, and like the whole thing. It's just like when Tara says, like I have been tied up, and he stole the baby, and you better get here. And like they have Zobel like dead to rights; they're about ready to kill him. And Jax is like, I need you, to Ron Perlman, and Ron Perlman's like, my baby, my boy, who I've threatened to kill multiple times this season. He needs me, and everything just stops. The world stops. Just stops rotating on its axis, and off he goes to go find him. And then they get to the docks as the Irishman's speeding away with the baby and his Lucky Charms. And fucking Jax just falls down, crumbles. And Ron Perlman, like, credit to him too, in a very physical acting scene where he's like, there's nothing he can do. This guy who has been so like high strung in terms of trying to keep shit going, keep things rolling, covering up murders, killing people, and they are all just left there bereft of all of their manly swagger. They are devastated by the loss of this, of Jax's baby, and you feel it as a viewer. Like, I watch that and I'm like, I was horrified. Like, between that and fucking Gemma's rape, like, two things in this season where I'm sitting there going, oh my God, this fucking show. Kurt Sutter, you mad genius. You hooked me. Well done. I mean, it took a rape and a baby stealing to do it, but, you know, all power to you. You figured me out. What'd you think, Jesse?
Yeah, it was something else. I remember watching the end of that last episode is really, really tense. Half sack. Halfsack ends up getting killed. He was with Tara at the time that Cameron showed up to steal the baby. And he had, you know, he's like, an eye for an eye. And he has a knife on the baby. Yeah. He's going to kill the baby.
You've heard me talk on Damn You Hollywood how there's no bravery in Hollywood. There might be on television. Jesus Christ, hold a life to a baby? And I then know, you're like dude. Thinking like these mad geniuses will actually do it too. Like, well, well, it's FX. Who fucking cares?
Nip Tuck and all these other things. Yeah.
We had Acevedo blow a guy on national television. Who gives a fuck? We're FX. We kill babies and blow people at knife point.
There it is. There it is.
To be their tagline. Stabbing and blowing. FX. We got the FX. Movies.
Oh, man. So yeah, good. So they... Halfsack ends up getting stabbed, and the guy runs away with the kid. And, you know, Tara's got to try and explain what happened. I mean, there's just all sorts of insanity in that last sequence. And just... That's how we're ending the season, is Jax is going to watch his baby be sped away in a boat, and these guys can do nothing.
Yeah,
they can't do anything.
Is it weird that I'm imagining season three opens up with them all riding motorcycles across, you know,
on
the water? they're just playing fucking Alabama Thunder Pussy, you know, they're just riding. I'm gonna get you. He's like in the speedboat.
Oh, amazing!
Yeah,
yeah, it sets up, you know. You are better not cancel that show in season two, man. Could you imagine? Like, there would be riots. There would be riots.
Oh my god, yeah. No,
season three had to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. All right, Jesse. I really did like this season between the Henry Rollins stuff, the slimy Vince McMahon-ish Zobel stuff, Gemma, the stuff with Gemma. The stuff that we just talked about, the conclusion of the season. This was tightly written. This was very focused. It was very much good guys, bad guys. I think even the stuff with the sheriff's office, where, you know, the deputy, you know, the sheriff tells the deputy, he was just like, look, you need to not get in bed with Zobel. He's the bad guy here. And for this to work, you know, I'm already corrupted. I'm in with the motorcycle games. Nothing I can do about this now. Excuse me. But you need to stay clean or this all goes to plaid. And I liked a lot of that interplay between them. And, you know, and like the guy that plays the deputy in the show, sense of conflict you read off of him, where it's so funny. He very much feels like a Vic Mackey. Like, I just want to shoot the bad guys. I'm so tired of, like, I am so forced and so constrained by the rubric of law enforcement. Meanwhile, everyone gets to do whatever the fuck they want. And I'm so frustrated by this. Like, he is like this close to flip the desk angry at all times. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, no wonder he makes some of the decisions that he does. He's not dumb. He's just like, he's trying to figure out what to do next. And, you know, and I like the level of respect that him and Jax have and all of that. Right. So it's a lot of really good stuff this season. You know, again, you kind of dragged me into Sons of Anarchy kicking and screaming, but, you know, I've turned around. I'm very anxious. For the first time since we started doing this, I'm very excited to talk about this show when we get to season three.
Okay.
All right. So unless you got anything else in terms of like general show review, I believe you were going to whip out your pictures and show them to me. Come on, Jesse. Make with the naked pictures already.
I will, as a matter of fact.
All right, here we go, sure, everybody.
Let's make sure this works. All right, so I'm going to share my screen. And we need this right here.
That's also what she said.
I'm going to actually, let me go ahead and hit slideshow and make sure that works.
Oh, here comes Jesse's home movies.
Look at this. I went to the Googles. And I made myself a PowerPoint.
Well done. Oh, good. Now things aren't like out of focus.
I have a hard time reading things over on the left hand side, but that's not for you. That's for me. Yeah, we talked about Jax. We didn't get, you know, we didn't really talk much about the porn that they got into here.
A Rattlesnake Broadcast Network where we don't talk about porn, and it would be actually like on point. Who knew?
Right.
The irony. Thy name is Rattlesnake Podcast.
They try to get into some legitimate business with the porn industry. There's a place that they
legitimate,
Caro, I think is where it's at. Yeah. And I think it's being run by the lady that there's a tie to somebody that they have in prison. I can't remember his name. Otto, yeah. I think is his name. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So yeah, we have that going on, you know, Jax and Tara, my notes on the left-hand side here about how Jax and Tara are, you know, their relationship is going strong. There's always this kind of like, he's worried about losing her.
Yeah.
Because of what's going on with the motorcycle club,
she is kind of a skittish cat until like the back half of the season in terms of like, I love you. And so I tolerate your motorcycle existence, but I don't approve of any of this. And right. then she flips that fucking switch and boom, you know, she's all in with the Flynn.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of what his motivation is here versus Clay, when he finds out about Clay's involvement with Donna and mm-hmm. her death, you know, Opie is pretty much, I've always thought as Jax's best friend. So Jax,
that is a tortured relationship this season.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, he feels kind of like I've got to do something to mm-hmm. to Clay to take vengeance. But he's like, do I tell Opie or do I not? Because if he tells Opie, he's really scared of what Opie will do.
Well, that's the other side of this is, you know, and I tell this to people all the time. It's like, don't just say no to something and have nothing to back it up with. Like, so Jax is very much like, we got to get out of the gun business. And Clay's like, and do what, motherfucker? How would we make money then? And that's where and I'm sorry, could we just like put that on the scales? It was like, well, sell pussy, guns, which is worse? Yeah. And that's a debate for another day. I'm just saying it's out there. I think it's an interesting point of view on the show.
The guys aren't getting laid by any guns, I'll tell you that much.
Well, if they are, I'm out here to kink shame.
That'd be something Tig would do, I would guess. All right, so yeah, here's Clay. And it continues to get worse for, he's just a real scumball most of the time. And then you watch him in his relationship with Gemma, you know, you wonder like, okay, a lot of times just by association alone, I don't think of bikers as treating their women very nice. And I think Clay is kind of like,
well, considering what they do with the one character from last season, where before she becomes an old lady, where they kind of refer to her and her ilk as like free use women.
Yeah.
Like if you are not an old lady, you are essentially a cum dumpster. And that is how you are regarded, to be passed around like a joint. And it's like, well, right. It's an interesting culture.
Yeah. Yeah. So his, you know, watching him, he loves Gemma. You can tell that he does.
Absolutely.
So there's that admirable quality of Clay that he does love Gemma, but you can tell that he loves the club more, and he wants to protect the club as much as possible, and he wants to protect their the way that they make money as much as possible. And of course, that's what brings him
power corrupts Jesse Starcher. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Without this motorcycle club, he has no power.
Right.
He is clinging to this motorcycle club because of the power and influence that it gives him. And when asked, why do we run guns? It's because that's where his power comes from. Like, it could be so easy to change this club to something different, to make it be about something else. But then what is Clay? What happens to Clay when they no longer have the money, the riches derived from selling illegal guns? What does he become? What becomes of him? Who is he as a man?
And I don't know if you
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I don't know if you caught this or not, but you know, they talk about in the season that if he can't ride, he can't lead.
Right.
So if you can't ride your bike, and a lot of times when you're a few scenes, you'll see Gemma putting needles into his fingers because he's got arthritis so bad. And when he's riding the bike, he's, you know, you could see him kind of take his hand and just kind of
clinch it. Can we just talk about that for a second? Have you ever ridden a motorcycle?
I've never. No. Okay. I've rode a bike.
A little 10 speed.
That's close.
Jesse pretends he's in Son of Anarchy. No, I'm actually
I'm gonna Mindy get on the back. She holds on.
She's like, "You're my old lady, Mindy. Get off me. Go wash the dishes, you nut job." No. I'm not gonna lie and say I've ridden a motorcycle, but I've been on them, and I've definitely, like, when they're idling, I've been on. You know, I've kind of hung out and held the things. Those things fucking vibrate a lot.
The handlebars.
Imagine how, you know, the amount of strength and tension needed to operate a motorcycle as much as these guys ride.
Yeah.
You know? And so imagine you have arthritis, whether or not it came from all the years of riding or just, you know, age catches up to us all and does us all dirty. So now imagine you have that much tension, you have that much vibration, you have that much heat, you have that much power between your legs and your hands, and he can't fucking do it without being an enormous amount of pain. And just and it's like my way of, like, relating to that, you know, when illness, age, what have you, takes the better of you and you can't do the things that define you, you struggle with who you are as a person. It is awful to go through. And I don't sympathize a lot with Clay because I think he's a bag of shit just like you. But I do sympathize with that idea of, who am I without the things that define me? And when you lose them just through the natural course of aging, it is painful. It is more painful than any actual injury I've ever suffered. And I can only imagine what this character is going through.
Yeah, yeah. And to watch him deal with what Gemma had gone through, there's, you know, a pretty tender moment, I think, between the two. Although, you know, it's Clay. It's kind of hard to have sympathy for him, but there's moments throughout the season where you tend to.
He has one moment that I laughed at because I've kind of been there, not in that very specific thing, but just that tenor and just the way you deal with people. So Jax has been just chipping at him and nagging him about, you know, killing Donna in the first season, and finally Clay has just had, like, enough of him, and he's like, "You bring a fucking Donna one more time, I'll kill you myself."
I will.
And I'm like, "I've fucking been there, Clay. I've been there."
Yeah.
Like, shut up about it, or fucking put up already.
Right. We talked a lot about Gemma, Katie Seagal's character.
Yeah.
A lot already. There really isn't much on my notes that we haven't covered. The bond between her and Tara, again, you kind of talked about that. Yeah. Those two, you could tell even in the first season, there was a history between the two that they didn't like each other.
Yeah.
And,
well, she didn't think Tara was good for Jax because, you know, she needs Jax to be a part of this fucking motorcycle club. And Tara was, you know, threatening essentially to take him out of it.
Yeah. The moment, I think, actually, you know what? I don't know if this is the next slide or not, but there's a moment where she and Tig are in the same room. Now, granted, she's been kind of staying away from Clay sexually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She has obviously because of what trauma she's been through. Mm-hmm. And I think she's, you know, she's at a place where her and Tig start to kind of,
yeah,
look like they're about to do something, but Tig finally straightens up and realizes.
Tig has that Bugs Bunny gremlin moment. What am I doing?
he knows. He knows, number one, he's betraying his best friend. Oh, he's betraying his club.
He bangs Gemma. He might as well fucking take himself out.
Right, exactly.
When he's done with Gemma, he might as well fucking blow a shotgun.
But the point of it is, though, is that, you know, she's just looking to be needed in that way. Yeah. And she feels like she can't be that with Clay. And then it just bubbles up.
I don't know if you heard me a couple of years ago when Sean and I reviewed X. X going to give it to you.
Yeah, I remember that.
And we talked about how the need for sexual intimacy doesn't go away with age. If anything, it becomes more pronounced. But while the mind and the heart definitely need and want sexual intimacy, the body is not always, you know, there to catch the ball, if you will. And so, you know, not that this is an age issue here, but it's a very similar thing in the sense of she feels destroyed. She feels violated. She feels ugly. She feels unwanted. But that need for sexual intimacy didn't die. It's still right. there. It's just she feels like she's unworthy of the man she loves, which is a fucked up way to think.
Yeah, it is. And again, that's the trauma. That's
sure.
And
it's hard because like I can go all mental health about it, but I don't want to be here for the next 6 hours. So it's like I'm just sort of trying to lightly touch on these things. But yeah, boy, you go so deep with this stuff.
Right. Right. All right, Opie.
And did he turn into the Undertaker this season?
Yes, dude. There's legitimately a death wish by Opie, because you can tell that he is on the precipice of I'm going to obviously get revenge for what happened to Donna. Actually, I shouldn't say revenge, because he finds out that what happened, that Tig and Clay were involved.
Right.
And instead decides not to do anything to them, although he gets his shots in on Tig a couple times, but he isn't, you're expecting him to grab a gun and shoot them, but that's not the case. Instead, he's
a true believer. This is about the preservation of the club.
It's about the club. But yeah, he definitely is ready to go at any moment to either shoot somebody and just get that rage out. The fact that his life has changed so much. He becomes involved with Lila, I think is her name. Is it Layla or Lila? Something like that. The porn actress there.
Let's go with Layla, because she's got me on my knees, Layla.
So they're together, and you're kind of like, Opie, hey man, you got kids, dude. You might want to settle down here. Just
that was rough for me to watch. That was like a personal thing with me, because again, the controversial, this might get me canceled. I don't like when children are mistreated or abandoned or neglected. Right. And you know, you have this whole thing with Opie, who is just like all in with the preservation of this club and proving himself. And you know, like it's like when Donna died, so did the piece of him that is the father of these kids, because he could give two shits in the fuck now. And right. His mom is even like, are you ever gonna like parent these kids? And he's like, they're fine, you know, hanging from a tree, you know, like one's dealing heroin in Baltimore. Like, he don't give a shit. Like
everybody loves Opie. Everybody wants Opie to succeed. He's like the one guy. Jax is the one that has the kind of like power, I guess, to change the club. The one guy that's being just destroyed by the club is Opie. And now I think he realizes that Stahl, or at least it was pointed to Stahl, was the one that kind of manipulated things to happen.
Right.
When Donna got killed. So he does begin to find out that Stahl was the one that was behind this.
He gets a little bit of revenge, doesn't he?
With Stahl? Does he show up in the parking lot? I can't remember.
I believe so. And I think he has a like dead to rights and basic, and I can't remember what all happens.
But... Well, I believe the quote is the villain showed mercy and then he left. So yeah, he had her dead to rights this season. She was crying, oh my gosh, please don't kill me.
Yeah.
And then he ends up leaving. So he definitely shows her mercy.
Yeah.
Also, at the end of this, I believe Jax shares the manuscript, his dad's manuscript, with him.
Right.
And I was so excited, because I was like, these two boys are going to get together and they are going to kick Clay in his ass.
Mm-hmm.
That was my expectation. But anyway, Lila, by the way. All right. Next up. Tig, we talked a little bit about Tig already.
So remember we were discussing the mask about, like, by the end of it, Calloway is just fucking, like is catatonic, and he's just all fucked up from having dealt with the mask. Yeah, that's Tig by the end of this season.
Yeah.
He is a mess.
Tig.
But Gil's going to do that to you.
Tig's a mess. Just put that on write it down, because we're going to talk. I've been ahead a few seasons, and trust me, Tig's
you
a
think
mess.
He's a mess now.
Just be ready. All right. So that's, I don't have much else. I mean, he does regret the fact that he killed Donna. I mean, you could see that when that.
Well, I mean,
happens.
He fucking shot an innocent woman, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
And it was literally like he bungled an assassination.
I remember when I was watching this, when my wife was watching this, I caught bits and pieces of the show. I never sat down and watched everything with her, but I remember watching and hearing about what Tig had done by killing Donna. And I was like, this guy needs to be killed immediately.
Jesse's like, no, fuck this. It's like, the vengeance is my... Jesse, it's a television show. No, fuck the Sons of Anarchy. Fuck Sam.
That's what I thought I was going to be doing this whole season, was like, Tig's got to go. But he regrets what he did. Plus, but the thing is that he's loyal to Clay, and he wants to keep this a secret as best as he can. And then when it's found out, Tig's just like, okay, you have every right to kill me. Go ahead and do it.
I tell you, it's keen writing. I was thinking this as you were talking about Opie. It's keen writing on the part of the team for Sons of Anarchy that there's a lot of shades of gray in this show. And going back to that moral compass, you know, that rooting for the good guys versus the bad guys, they don't make your star good guy players so unlikable that you can't root for them. And so even a situation like this where Tig knows he screwed up, and Tig understands that Opie has every right to take it out of his ass, and he's like, yeah, go do it. And there's something to be said for, you know, it's a very, I'm gonna go with masculine. Someone can argue with me if they don't think it's a gender thing, but I think it is. I think having that like honor code, you know, among men, and going, when you know that you've done a bad thing and you owe it to somebody, you know, for them to, you know, take back the wrong that you committed, that's something that I can get behind. Like, I as the viewer can kind of forgive Tig for killing Donna, because at least when the time was right, he owned up to it and said, Opie is in the right to take this out on me, because he is owed that much. Like, there's an honor there among these thieves that is one of those things that gets me hooked into the show and continuing to be like, okay, I don't always love everything that these guys are doing, but I can get behind that much.
All right, we talked about Tara already, and her becoming the old lady.
I'm gonna fucking quote Tara. I know where your kids go to school.
She is
so good.
Turning heel. I don't know. It's pretty crazy. Just watching her kind of metamorphose into the old lady role. You know, but she has to deal with Jax and his motorcycle club and their violence.
I love the conversation that her and Gemma have in the car when Gemma is like, you're a healer, go be a healer, don't let anyone take that from you. I think it's something that I think as like a middle-aged adult, that's something I can definitely buy into and relate to, is in terms of, you know, sometimes when you play by all the rules and you do for everybody else, you just come out the loser every single time. There comes a time when you have to start taking back some of your power and do the things that are meaningful to you, that make you. And I like that exchange that they have. Now, I'm not saying you need to go throw an executive a beating, but I do like the fact that she stood up for herself. And, you know, it was one of the things, again, going back to the tortured metaphor of wrestling, one of the things that always made people buy into the Steve Austin, Vince McMahon thing was, who doesn't have a fantasy of beating the living piss out of your boss?
Right.
And that's what that moment was all about, for, you know, because we're all Tara in that scene. We're all like, you know, we've all suffered under the weight of bureaucracy and structure and asinine rules and lack of common sense in the workplace. And who hasn't wanted to just throw a beating on their boss for it? And she does. And we're all Tara in that scene. It's great.
This picture, by the way, is when she was facing off with that porn actress.
Mm-hmm.
Go
back 1 second. She has hungry eyes. You notice?
We only wish. So I threw Chibs on here because Chibs, he's not that prominent of a character. I mean, he gets almost blown up by the IRA. He's got some ties to the IRA. He knows.
Yeah, he's kind of that character that hooks into the IRA stuff.
Yeah, he gets almost killed when I think it was Gemma's. Well, I think it was Gemma's van or somebody's van was rigged to blow. Mm-hmm. And he ends up getting almost killed ends up in the hospital with a bad head injury, but he's okay. He gets out of there all right. All right, here's your corporate shitbag.
He's got no chance. No chance in hell.
Oh my goodness.
What a slimy bag of shit.
Yeah.
Like, just want an him unrepentant piece of shit villain this is. Like, again, let's get Robert Winfrey in here for Everyone Loves a Bad Guy. This guy has an excuse for fucking everything. He has a reason for the season for everything that he does, and it's all to push his agenda, which is me first and the gimme gimmies. He's just all about himself. He doesn't give a shit about the cause, which is what raises Henry Rollins' ire. He doesn't give a shit about charming. This is all about lining his pockets and making him fatter and richer.
Yeah. Yeah, his daughter is the one that tricked Gemma into getting into the van where they abducted her and raped her. Took her and raped her, I should say. Not only is he a shitbag, but it runs in the family. Yeah. So,
can you imagine being like being the chick in that scenario? Like, here's what we're gonna do. See, like you're gonna trick her into thinking your baby's choking, and then we're gonna take her home and rape her. Yeah, I'm as a woman, I'm on board with this.
I'm on board. Yeah. I am on board.
This seems like a good plan.
I remember the episode where Jim is walking around and sees that girl out in the town, and she's like, "Holy shit, that's the girl that got me to go into the van."
You wish you'd pull out a skateboard out of her, like, you know, out of her pocketbook,
right in the face. Agent Stahl, Hamina, Hamina, Hamina. I'm a fan of her work. We talked about
her work, Jesse. Listen, I'll be the male chauvinist around here, pal.
The chauvinist.
Yes. Welcome to casual misogyny.
She's very much a villain, I think, in my opinion. Oh, yeah. She could be working for the FBI, but she is definitely working to. She wants to put Sam Crow out. She wants to take all of them out. And even though she's in there trying to get the IRA, really, she wants to further her career.
Did you?
And Sam Crow is another step on that career.
Did you watch The Shield at all?
Never did.
Oh, my God. Go watch The Shield. But specifically, because the reason why I'm bringing it up is she reminds me of the Forrest Whitaker character from whatever season he's in, where he is so hell-bent on getting Mackie, he starts breaking all kinds of laws. And in the end, he ends up getting himself put in, spoilers, he gets himself put in prison because he is so blinded by hatred and wanting to bring down this bag of shit who always is one step ahead of him and getting away with murder, quite literally. And then you have Agent Stahl, same shit. Literally gets away with murder. She murdered a guy. She shot him in the back. And then she sees, you know, unwilling Patsy, Gemma, just like, here, catch. Like, oh, catch. Geez, son of a bitch.
Yep.
Just so you ever see a human being turn into a fucking lollipop? Because that's that scene.
It says jackass right across the sucker.
Poor Katie Seagal.
Yeah. But anyway, Agent Stahl, thorn, perpetual thorn in their side, especially this season, continually. All right, and I don't think we talked about Chief Wayne Unser very much when it came to it last year or last season. And he is still a pretty central character to – he's the guy that's kind of got the link to the club and still a chief and is working to try and help kind of shield the club. But he also has to do – he has to balance that with the ATF or – FBI, whoever it is that's coming in there to try and get Sam Crow. So he's kind of tipping them off for some things. But I think the one thing that really stood out to me is his relationship with Gemma. Like, you can tell that they have a history together. When she gets, he's the one that finds her after she gets raped. And in order to cover it up, he like wrecks her car so that she doesn't have to tell. So she has an excuse as to what happened. So he's as kind of like, I didn't very, very much like the character in the first season, but Chief Wayne Unser has definitely grown on me as we continue throughout season two, just because you could tell he's got a good heart.
He's between a rock and a hard place. And he's also very much charming first. Like, he's making a deal with the devil and he's allowing some not so great things to happen so as to preserve the sanctity of charming. And he's kind of like, well, my soul is gone. My soul is ruined. You know, at this point, like, he's just kind of looking at the deputy going, save yourself, because I'm gone. I'm done.
Yeah, to mention, I mean, he's dealing with cancer. He's getting radiation and all that.
Yeah.
He's definitely got some health struggles that are kind of on point here. But anyway, I wanted to make sure to bring him up.
Yep.
Henry freaking Rollins.
Because he's a liar. He'll rip your mind out. He'll burn your soul.
AJ Weston. His kids, too. I think it's in that episode or in that season where his kids are like shooting at the shooting at the bikers from the house.
I'm like, sorry. Jack's yelling, call child services. I was like, you pansy. Like, it's such a whiny moment. Like, and I don't know if there was just like another way of delivering that line that doesn't quite sound whiny to me, but he was like, call child services. That kid's a psychopath. And like, prances out of the room.
I think that's it. That's all I have.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to talk. Rollins
rocks a season.
Yeah. I mean, just watching him come in there and thinking he holds his own. I didn't grab a picture of him, but tell me you at least caught some of the scenes with Chucky this season. He got his fingers cut off because he had masturbating disorder or what, CMD, I think is what it was.
Well, my favorite is like they call him into the clubhouse and like Jim's like, come on, Stumpy.
Let me tell you, still my favorite character. I love that. I love Chucky glad. When he shows up. he's like, I can't do it now. And I think it's this season where he's like, I accept that. Like he is taking on a new, it seems like he takes on a new, like, oh my goodness. I don't want to say mantra, but he changes himself so much to where he's like, okay, I'm going to be a more positive type of a guy. I accept that. But anyway, so there it is. Sons of Anarchy season 2, show and tell is done and over with. Hour 6, Mark, we kept it around there.
Yeah, we did good. We were lean and mean this time. Yeah. Yes, sir. You know, like I said, I'm excited for season 3. I want to see what happens with the baby. I want to see how Jax and crew deal with the Irish. We have our villains for next season, presumably. You know, they beat the evil, the dreaded neo-Nazi, and now they have to, you know, beat the dreaded Irishman in his shillelagh.
His pot of gold and his lucky charms.
That's right. Stereotypes. All right. Speaking of stereotypes, tomorrow David Wright and I will be reviewing Star Trek Lower Decks season 4, and we're finally caught up on that show. Great show, Jesse. Have you watched any of Lower Decks yet?
No, I've really wanted to, though. I've so much want to. I'm a Star Trek guy at heart. I mean, to be honest, I just haven't had a chance to really get into some of the shows.
Okay, well, turn off Everyone Loves Raymond and put on some Lower Decks. Okay, watch it with Mindy. She'll love it. Now, it's a really good show. Like, David wanted to talk about it because he likes to talk about anything Star Trek. And I'm just like, oh, God, everything coming out of, like, Paramount Plus just sucked diddly ucks. He's like, no, please, please, baby, please watch Lower Decks with me. You won't be sorry. And I tell you, it's like one of the best, for, you know, especially as an animated show, one of the best written shows I've reviewed the last couple of years. It's, you know, I was pleasantly surprised. And I was happy David pushed me into doing it. So we're going to do that tomorrow. And then on Thursday, myself and Sean Comer are doing a triple feature. We're doing another director focus and doing a weird one, doing a little one off the beaten path here. We're looking at Jim Jarmusch. And this was basically a whole elaborate plot so that I can get someone to talk coffee and cigarettes with me. You've never seen indie movies.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Coffee and Cigarettes is a compilation of scenes of people talking to each other while drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. It's awesome. Okay, it is like the height.
It's on the nose there. What it is?
Yeah, it's exactly. It is exactly what it says on the marquee. let me tell you how this is the height of indie snobbery. Okay,
oh, goodness.
I have never seen a movie more up its own ass. It's awesome.
Oh wow!
If you are an indie movie snob, it's not getting any more snobby than coffee and cigarettes.
Nice.
So I had to talk about this, but. But sticking with Jim Jarmusch, then we are also talking Ghost Dog, which every fucking person I knew back in New York who was an indie snob thought Ghost Dog was the best thing ever.
Is that oh my goodness, who is in that? Thank you.
Yeah,
that's and Lawrence Fishburne
and members of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And then finally, Bill Murray and Adam Driver in The Dead Don't Die.
Okay.
Which is the most subtle zombie flick I've ever seen.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that being a thing, and I wanted to watch it, and I never did. Daggone.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to pick one of these to watch that won't drive your wife insane, I would say The Dead Don't Die comes as close to a mainstream movie as any of these three get.
So I watched, just throwing this out here, I watched Dream Scenario. I don't know if you've seen that yet with Nicolas Cage. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that one. I haven't seen it, but I've heard interesting things about it.
The wife looked at me and said, "That was stupid."
Oh, Mindy. Oh, Provincial Mindy.
She needs to put that shit on a shirt.
That was stupid.
I hear it all the time. Try and watch a movie, whether
one, it looks one of these right deals right here. Hand. That was stupid.
Exactly.
Should write a song about it, Jesse. Jesse writes the songs. I don't know if people know that. We have a lot of people.
I don't know about 80%, maybe 70% me. the other 30s chat GPT, and I just tune it up a little bit.
All right. That's what's going on this week. No Damn You Hollywood, because there were no good movies that came out this weekend, or whatever came out was streaming, and I didn't want to watch Irish Wish or review or make Robert review it. So that's what's going on. And then we will. Ronnie couldn't be here tonight, which was unfortunate because we kind of, you know, did this for him. But we will be back to review season 3 April 29th. So at the end of next month, we will do Sons of Anarchy season 3. Hopefully Ronnie will be with us then. However, I got Ronnie coming on to do WrestleMania coverage with me on April 8th. So as far as, hey, if you like the magic that is me and Jesse, 2 weeks ago, or no, last week, me and him talked Big Dick Energy. That's right. We pulled it out and we discussed it. No, we talked the new Ministry album on Ministry, Hopium for the Masses, on the Metal Hammer of Doom jukebox. So that was fun. And then, Jesse, when are you back? You ever podcast with me again, Jesse?
Not until next month, as far as I know. Not until we get back together for this season 3.
All right. Well, there you go. Jesse, show us where you pissed from. So tell everyone about your comic podcast that only deals with Image Comics.
That's 90s comics, Mark.
Oh, there were other comics in the 90s besides Image.
Yes. Yes. As much as to my chagrin, there was still Marvel and DC hanging around in the 90s.
Everyone had pouches.
Pouches and shoulder pads, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Pouches and shoulder pads.
And nipples. Yeah, nipples as far as the eye could see.
Oh, goodness. Could you?
Yes. And cleavage you could sail a boat through. The 90s.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that's the Unspoken Issues podcast, where I discuss 90s comics right there on the Source Material Comics podcast. Source Material Network, whatever it is. It's not the network, because that's the W2Mnet.com. Network. It is the Source Material Comics feed. That's where I was going. Yes, you can hear myself, Dean Compton, Derry Waite. I just recorded with Chris and Evan. We discussed some stuff that kind of ties in with the X-Men animated series that's kind of coming up. We did some X-Men Adventures comics from the 90s. Plus, we did a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 4 from Image Comics, Mark Radulich. That's right. We talked the black and white red bandana on the cover, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It gets gritty.
Oh, she roped you into doing X-Men 97, didn't she?
Oh, I'm there. As a matter of fact, I gotta catch up on the first like 6 seasons or five.
You're making, seasons, you're making your kid watch?
I'm gonna try. I mean, if I can get them in there, I'm going to try.
You might want to copper Barnes that shit, like strap him to the chair, toothpicks in the eyes.
that wouldn't happen.
It's not child abuse if you don't leave marks.
Duly noted. Mark and I do get together on the Source Material Comics podcast, and we discuss some fun comics over there. This day, which is Monday, we released our first in a trilogy of discussions about The Mask. And Mark Radulich is not Stanley Ipkiss all the time. It is definitely Not the Stanley Ipkiss you get in the theaters. That's for dang sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you saw the Jim Carrey movie, you're going to get a whole other experience with this comic book.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. But please check that out. We had a good discussion there. And I think that's about it, unless you want to talk about Snap Material, which that launched there last week. That's right, Snap Material. Strip Snap, as Mark likes
to call it. Jesse and Evan Bevins, who is good to his mother, they like to play Snap, and when one of them loses, they have to lose an article of clothing. They do it live. They do it on their OnlyFans page that you can subscribe to. That's how Jesse's going to buy his house that he's renting.
Perfect. How did you know? me and Evan got together and released our first ever video. Snap, not Strip Snap. See, you got me saying it now. Snap Material. Did not strip on YouTube. Now, you can check out YouTube. Go to the Stiznar Source Material Comics, I think is what it is, or Source Material YouTube, something like that.
You know your own social media.
I need to write this shit down. I get into plugs.
Yeah, but you can go check that out. And ChatGPT will give you a script. Then you can set it to music. You can sing it to us.
That's brilliant. Next time you throw it to plugs, I'm just going to hit a button. And it's just going to play my plugs. I'm going to have my plugs in a song.
Tell them where they can find your OnlyFans.
The OnlyFans. I imagine somebody who has an OnlyFans probably has a TikTok as well, and I don't have either. So.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm on TikTok.
Oh, are you really? I see it right there on your tag.
At Mark Radulich on TikTok, where we do clips of the shows. I'm also cutting video and adding stuff from 2021. So if like, hey, in this video, he's full beard. In this one, he looks like he still has cancer. What's going on? Well, back then, I used to do a clean shave. And so some of those are up, the 2021 shows. Wow. But also the 2024 shows. And in between that, it's my son riffing on everything and anything. He riffed on pancake chips. Today, he riffed on time travel. He did another time travel riff, Jesse.
Whoa. Oh. Now I got to get TikTok.
You have TikTok. I've tagged you. His whole thing was, what if time travel was readily available to everybody and how fucked up the world would be if that happened? This kid's a thinker.
That's a premise.
Conversations with Grandpa has almost 70,000 views. It's my first viral video enter, and it's my crazy ass demented father screaming at my 10-year-old son about Dune.
Oh man! And I don't know the generation in the middle, which is funny. So
I hold the camera. That's my job.
Great.
When Jesse and Evan are playing Strip Snap, I hold the camera. All right.
Put it on our resume.
All right. I think we've hit our quota of gay innuendo for the night. So I've hit my quota of gay innuendo is the phrase that pays here on the Rattlers and Broadcasting Network, and that brings us to a close in our review of Sons of Anarchy season 2. For Jesse Starcher, for Ronnie Adams, who was not available tonight for some odd reason, I am your mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Radulich. Be well, be safe, and vroom vroom.